Thanks, Carrie's. Dave?
Okay. Can everyone hear me? Okay, good. I'm Jake, and I'm going to talk about measurement protected order in monitored quantum circuits with continuous symmetry. And this is work I've been doing at UC Santa Barbara with Yaodong Li and Matthew Fisher. But it's actually work I started here last year with Roger and Tim. So it's good to be back talking about it. And there are a lot of words in that title. So we're going to break some of those down, starting by talking about monitored quantum circuits, which you heard a bit about yesterday, but we'll run through again, lay a bit more background for what they are, why we care about them. And in particular, we're going to focus on non-equilibrium order, which is kind of interesting because a lot of times in physics, we're talking about systems that are at or very near equilibrium, or we're used to those sorts of ensembles. That's what we have technology to deal with and intuition to deal with. So it's interesting to have a model where you can talk about an ensemble of states that is not in equilibrium with respect to any meaningful Hamiltonian or temperature or anything. So it's a very different system in that way. And we're going to talk in section two about a particular model with continuous symmetry. And that's interesting because work has already been done here by Tim and by Shang-Chi on a cool model with a discrete symmetry and interesting order out of equilibrium. And we're going to try to build on that by doing the same sort of thing with a different kind of symmetry. So to jump into that, first, monitored quantum circuits. Really, even before that, you could just have a quantum circuit. And as we heard yesterday, that's an interesting minimal model for quantum evolution. What we have here is, I guess in particular, 7 qubits arranged in the x-axis and going forward in time. And then we have 2 site unitary operators in blue. So they're naturally local and unitary, which is what we expect from our quantum mechanics. But in principle, we can also have measurements. That looks like some observable with a variety of projectors and related eigenvalues. And the dynamics look like a state getting carried to a projected version of that state and renormalized with some probability corresponding to those projectors. And that's another kind of dynamics we see out in the world. And we do that just by measuring some observable in some place in our system. And really, if we want to be more general, there's no reason that we can't start to use those measurement results to do something later on our circuit. We can take the result from some measurement earlier in time and use that to inform what unitary we apply or what we measure later down the road. So when you have all this, it's actually a very big space of models. When you're doing unitary evolution, projective measurement, and arbitrary feedback based on that, that's everything from, on the one hand, a really simple model for a chaotic quantum system with lots of unitary evolution, or on the other hand, your arbitrary, finely tuned quantum algorithm. So this is a huge space of things from very finely tuned to very general. A particular model that people became interested in 2018 is a model where you can see an interesting phase transition in entanglement. The idea is that we start with a lot of unitary operators in a sort of brick wall architecture here, but we start to put in some measurements here in the Z basis, where at each site, at each step in time, there is some probability P of doing that measurement. And the idea is that if that P is zero, you're just doing lots of unitary operators and things are becoming very entangled. But as you increase that probability of measurement, you can actually enter a sort of highly monitored phase on the right here, where the entanglement growth is suppressed. So on the right here, the entanglement grows with the area of the system. And since the boundary here is constant because it's one dimensional, that means that as you look at larger and larger systems, the entanglement of the steady state is staying constant. Whereas below some critical probability of measurement, you have much larger growth of entanglement. And one other important idea here is these are all statements about the steady state of this system, which means that we're taking some initial state and going layer after layer of the circuit until whatever we're looking at sort of stabilizes, and we say that it's stabilized into some steady state, and then we start talking about those statistics. So this was already an interesting model to look at because we're seeing interesting behavior in a steady state that's not in any meaningful equilibrium. Because this isn't just a Hamiltonian that is evolving over time. Or if you write it down as a Hamiltonian, it's in discrete time, and that Hamiltonian keeps changing at each time step. So there's not really any equilibration happening in a standard way. Instead, there's some dynamic steady state, and we're seeing interesting behavior of those statistics. Later on, an interesting model was introduced by Tim and Shang-Chi here, where you take that same sort of model with unitary operators and measurements, but instead of just doing measurements with probability P, we actually have 2 types of measurements. With probability R, we're going to do a ZZ measurement. And that's something that's basically asking whether the spins are anti-aligned or aligned in Z. And with probability 1 minus R, you do X measurements, which is asking whether it's pointed plus or minus in X. And there you start to see an interesting phase diagram that looks like this. So the idea is that when you have a low probability of measurement down towards the bottom, you have the same volume law phase we saw before. You're not measuring much and you just have a lot of entanglement. But when you measure more up towards the top, it actually fractures into two different phases. If you're doing a lot of ZZ measurements, you enter an ordered spin glass phase. There, the order looks kind of like this state. This is sort of the paradigm of the spin glass, where it's a cat state with very strong correlations or anti-correlations between spins at each site. On the other hand, if you measure X a lot, you'll enter a state like the one up to the top, which is not ordered with respect to spin glass or anything that is interesting to us here. So what we see is that as long as you do a lot of ZZ measurements, you enter this spin glass phase with this order in Z. And this model, actually, I really should back up to make this point. This model has a Z2 discrete symmetry. And that's because these measurements are symmetric under flipping all of your spins in X. And we actually enforce that for the unitaries we apply. So we have this symmetry. And then when you get to this spin glass, you have an order with respect to that symmetry. And that's, again, an interesting thing to see in this out of equilibrium setting, where this isn't that we've actually waited a long time for a system to equilibrate. Instead, we're looking at this dynamic system. And we see that it remains ordered because of the continued action of these measurements. So that's sort of the paradigm that we're starting with. But an interesting question to ask from this point is this a special phenomenon of this model? Is it something about the discrete symmetry or something about this architecture that is giving this behavior? Or can we generalize and look at different models, different measurements, and different symmetries and see orders that we'd expect for those symmetries? So that's what we're going to talk about next, trying to develop a model where you start with some continuous symmetry and you're able to reach an ordered phase with respect to that symmetry. Before we really get to that, we need to talk about continuous symmetries. So the simplest continuous symmetry that you can think of, or at least that I can think of, is a U1 symmetry. To set that up, we have some charge Q, which is the total spin in the Z direction. And then we can do some unitary operator, U of theta, that rotates. And really what this is accomplishing, since each ZI commutes with all the other sites, is accomplishing a rotation about the Z-axis. And if you want to focus on measurements or unitaries that are acting on two sites, and that means you want to commute with a matrix like this. This is the charge at two sites. And what that means is that's the space of matrices that have anything in the top left, anything in the bottom right, and these degrees of freedom in the middle 2x2 block. Those are matrices that are going to conserve this U1 charge. An example of a matrix that does that is the swap matrix. And here we're looking at swap measurements. And that might be a little surprising because maybe you think that swap is a unitary that swaps things, which it is, but you can also look at it and it's a Hermitian matrix. So we can also use it to measure the parity of two spins. And in that case, we have 1 plus eigenspace with 0, 0, 1, 1, and the symmetric superposition between 0, 1, and 1, 0. And in the other eigenspace, we have minus parity, and that's this anti-symmetric state. And it's also possible that you recognize these eigenspaces, and that's because we can write the swap operator in terms of the total spin at those two sites, shifted by the identity. And then all the eigenvalues change, but the eigenvectors stay the same. And the subspaces we're talking about are the triplet subspace with larger total spin and the singlet subspace with smaller total spin. So at this point, we can already talk about a model that maybe has a brick wall of these swap measurements. And you might hope that if you do enough swap measurements, you'll cohere into the plus space or the minus space, and you'll start to see some order with the total spin. Really intuitively, what you'd like, since you have a U1 symmetry, is that it would symmetry break and sort of point somewhere in the XY plane. It turns out that swap is insufficient to do that. But we can make one more development and look at the following model. So here, we still have a brick wall of mostly swap measurements, but we're actually using some classical processing now, where you do some swap measurement and you look at what you get. Is it positive or negative parity? And then if it's negative parity, you actually apply a Z unitary on the first site. And what that does is it takes that singlet state that you must have had locally and pushes it up to one of those triplet states. So you're actually doing active work to try to push yourself into the plus eigenspace. And this turns out to be a tool for getting towards the kind of order we're looking for. This shows a little bit about what you see as you start to simulate this model. In particular, this is the half-chain entanglement of a system from 6 to 18 qubits. Over time, as you apply layers after layers of these swap measurements and then Z unitary feedback based on the swap measurement result. And on the left, that's what's on the right. On the left is a version with no feedback, so you're just doing swap measurements. On the left, you can see that over time for these various system sizes, you have fluctuations that continue, and they seem to continue for long times. And when you use the feedback, it's actually quite nice. They stabilize very quickly to solid values. And that's because you're doing more work to push them to particular states. And it turns out that on the left, we're not going to get the order we're looking for. On the right, we are. And that means that on the right, as we get to this sort of steady state where these values stabilize and look in system size, we're going to see a parameter that grows with system size. And what is that parameter? That parameter is a ferromagnetic order parameter, or in particular, this susceptibility. This is going to measure and diagnose whether we have order pointed anywhere in three dimensions. But more realistically, if we specialize to an initial state that has, say, an equal number of spins pointed up in Z and down in Z, then since our dynamics conserves that U1 charge, we're going to stay in that subspace and we'll be pointed more in XY. But this is the order parameter. And to sort of skip a step here, we find that this model does have this ferromagnetic order. So this model does achieve this order that we're looking for in the steady state. And it's also interesting that you can write this as a linear function of the density matrix for this one trial. And we're going to see in the next slide why that's an interesting thing. But that just follows from you take the trace and the cat psi moves to the bra. So the reason that becomes interesting is because of an important topic whenever you're looking with monitored quantum circuits, and that's the post-selection problem. So the idea here is that if you actually want to, in real life, do an experiment where you take a quantum state and evolve it over time and do measurements and actually measure something at the end and see if you have order, then you need to do tomography on that state. And tomography to identify the quantum state takes a number of measurements on the same state. And since we can't clone quantum states, that means you need to be able to reproduce the same evolution to keep getting to the same state. But that's pretty tough when you have measurements, because we don't have any control over measurement results. When you do a measurement, it could be a plus or a minus in this case, and more generally, it could be any of various measurement results. That means if you want to get the same state again to start to do tomography, you need to run again and again and again. And that's exponentially hard in the number of measurements you have. So that's a barrier not for theoretical simulations where you have total control over the state, but in practice, if you actually want to do quantum mechanics and see what you're looking for. So it's hard in general to reproduce the state you're looking for. And that's in particular when you're looking at these quantum trajectories where you're following a pure state. And that's relevant because some of the things we looked at before, for example, this entanglement transition, entanglement isn't something that you can see with just, well, you can't just see it with copies of the state along the way. You need information about the state that you get from multiple steps of tomography by simulating the state again and again. So that falls into the post-selection problem case. But there's a sort of more natural observable of the system, or at least characterization of the system, when you have monitored quantum circuits. And that's the density matrix that you get as you evolve through the quantum channel described by this. So the idea here is that you can take some density matrix and you can send it to this case where the plus measurement occurs, plus the case where the minus measurement occurs, and you do Z feedback. And the idea here is that for any given pure state trajectory, there's a corresponding density matrix. And since the order we're looking for is linear, it also makes sense to add up various trials. And then you have a density matrix that captures not just one trajectory, but actually a whole sum of various trajectories. And then if an observable you're looking for is linear in that object, which is containing information about all of these trajectories, you don't actually run at the post-selection problem, because you can just do tomography on the statistics of the state you get by running again and again and again. And if you can see order there, then you don't need to worry about actually separating out the different pure states by your measurement results. The idea here is when you can follow the object that's just in the quantum channel and look at the statistics of all of these trajectories, then that's something you can see experimentally more easily than when you have to actually follow each pure state and understand more about it, like when you're looking at an entanglement. So that's kind of nice, because if we go back a slide here, we see that that's the kind of order we have here. So in one way, this is something that you could actually look to see experimentally. On the other hand, it doesn't seem to us, at least from what we've looked at so far, that this order is robust to any sort of perturbation. In all the models that I explained before the one that I'm talking about here, there was sort of one type of measurement with some probability and another type of measurement, or unitary operators, some sort of disturbance or perturbation. And then you could look at a phase transition where your order persists over some parameter space, and then it goes away. So far, we found that this order is pretty fragile. If you throw Z measurements or Z unitaries, it seems to die out pretty quick. Although, I think there's more exploration to be done there. That's unfortunate, because although you could see this without the post-selection problem, unless you have perfect quantum simulation, you're not actually going to be able to stabilize the order you're looking for. So it remains to be seen whether there's an alteration that can be made to make this stable to more types of perturbations, or any types of perturbations, or if there's something about the continuous symmetry that makes that task really difficult. And that would be an interesting difference between the discrete symmetry case that was already looked at and this continuous symmetry case. There are some things that we're thinking about for the future, though. One of those is taking very seriously this quantum channel. So the idea is that you're taking some state as a density matrix to a new density matrix, which is a linear function of the original one. And since that's a linear function, you can actually express that as a matrix. It won't be Hermitian or have any of those nice properties, although there are some properties it gets from the quantum channel. And then what you're looking for a steady state are eigenstates of that channel matrix that have eigenvalue 1, because those are ones that are going to persist over time. Things with eigenvalue less than 1 will die out over long times. And another way to say that is we can make this quotes Hamiltonian 1 minus this channel matrix, where the ground states of that Hamiltonian are the steady states that you're looking for. I say quote Hamiltonian because it's not Hermitian, and it's hard to think about what a Hamiltonian has to be Hermitian. This isn't describing real energy spectra, but we are sort of looking for a ground state of this. And if you knew something about the ground state and the low-lying excitations, the states that are sort of near steady state but not quite there, maybe that could tell you something about what types of perturbations are things that disturb your order in the steady state and what types of perturbations aren't. Another feature of this is that you can start to do different analyses that you would do for a normal Hamiltonian, like DMRG or other things, to actually understand that spectrum and the low-lying levels and try to get a handle on what the perturbations are doing. So a few key takeaways here are that monitored quantum circuits are an interesting platform for studying order out of equilibrium. A lot of the world is out of equilibrium, and a lot of the world is quantum. So it makes sense to ask about quantum systems out of equilibrium. But since there are so few tools and technology for understanding an arbitrary state out of equilibrium, it's nice to have a very simple model where you can start to answer that question. And here, very naturally, since we're applying layer after layer of quantum evolution, and it's changing at each step, you have a naturally out of equilibrium system where you can start to think about what properties there are of that steady state. Even though that steady state is not an equilibrium distribution like you'd be used to, with a temperature that's equilibrating with something in particular. So that's key takeaway one. Takeaway two is that we can make a U1 symmetric model using swap measurements and using Z feedback, where you get to an interesting order over long times. And that's a nice step because that means that there's something about the previous discrete symmetry case that is more general. There are ways to set up different circuits and get order that breaks continuous symmetries. On the other hand, we aren't able to make that robust to perturbations, at least so far. So maybe there's something deeper about continuous symmetries that makes it difficult to stabilize against different types of perturbations. That's where we are so far. And really, I think I'm ready to take questions. So are there any questions? Yeah.
Sorry, just to be clear.
Yeah.
Your swap measurement and Z feedback model, you are performing one of these measurements at every possible opportunity in like your brick work.
So that's a really good point. So you could think about a whole set of models where you change that probability. It doesn't change as far as we've seen the order that you get. The simulation, I think the data I showed briefly had a 50% chance. So it's sort of like a half filled brick wall. So that's a really good question. But you also get the order if you fill it more.
And then adding in a single unitary in there is a perturbation that would destroy your order?
Yeah. So for example, so there's a couple things to say there from what we've seen so far. And there's definitely more analysis to do. If you do Z measurements, it seems to pretty quickly destroy the order. And there's something that makes some sense there, where in the case with ZZ measurements and X measurements, the damage done to your spin glass by measuring X at one site and sort of pushing something out of this cat state can be repaired just by a ZZ measurement along an adjacent bond. There's sort of a natural nice operation that quickly restores that order. On the other hand, the steady state that you get when you maximize your total spin and get this ferromagnetic order has sort of a long range blurring of particles. So that if you measure Z at one site and ask what the charge is there, you actually kill a lot of that entanglement and it takes more steps to restore you to the previous state. That doesn't say anything rigorous about perturbations to the steady state, but there's some feeling that the damage done by a perturbation is harder to fix.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Any other questions? Yeah.
Thank you for the great talk. I think I just have a general motivation question.
Yeah.
That is, I see that you're already trying to do. It's like, we're trying to keep this this high kind of the same and all, because if one of them turns out to be in the single, you kind of transform them back.
Yeah.
And then you said that this relates to studying phase transitions out of equilibrium. Could you elaborate a bit more on that? Like, I didn't get exactly why you're trying to stabilize it all on the triplet. And
so yeah, I think for me, there's two pieces of that. And then if I don't actually answer your question, let me know and I'll try again. But sort of the first piece is, why can't you just use swap measurements? Like, why is the feedback and pumping up to the triplet sector actually an interesting thing to do? And the reason actually comes when you look at the quantum channel here. If you just look at the pure state dynamics, this swap measurement and the order you're looking at don't actually, well, the swap measurements don't leave that order fixed. So for a particular pure state trajectory, you can change how ordered it is by doing these swap measurements. But if you actually look at the statistics of an ensemble of trajectories, you see that doing a swap measurement, let me back up one step here. I was thinking too fast. If you instead look at the trajectory with just a swap measurement and no feedback, what you find is that that commutes with the order. So although a given trajectory can have different order as you go, the whole ensemble of trajectories has order that stays the same on average if you don't have any feedback. So swap measurements are insufficient. So pumping up to higher sectors of spin is important for getting the order, because otherwise it's just conserved by the whole ensemble. That's why we introduce feedback. How that relates to being out of equilibrium is maybe there's just a sort of connection or different ideas of a steady state versus equilibrium. Like, we are trying to push to a particular ensemble, or we're doing active work to have a certain ensemble of states. And it sort of equilibrates in that way. But there's no sense in which it's in equilibrium with this big bath at a certain temperature. It's always changing. And I think if you think, and this isn't stuff that I even feel so comfortable with, but some pretty core definitions of equilibrium, I think, rely on no sort of ongoing dynamics. The space that this is exploring, I think, isn't the same as any canonical ensemble you'd get at a particular temperature. I think that's the sense in which it's out of equilibrium. This rho is not a Gibbs state of anything, and it's not equilibrated any time as you keep evolving. Does that answer your question, or are you going for something different?
No.
Okay, perfect. Any other questions, or there's still time? Okay, any other questions? Thank you.